This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Cioli podcast.
Good morning, America. I'm Charles Gibson.
I'm Diane Sawyer, and it's Tuesday, September 11th, 2001.
It is lunchtime in London, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, and 8 a.m. here in New York, live from the CNN Financial News headquarters.
It is beautiful outside, perfect September day with lots of sunshine. Oh, would you look at Washington, huh? I'm going outside today.
Other than that, it's kind of quiet around the country. We like quiet. It's quiet. It's too quiet.
Number two.
Yeah. This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center. Apparently, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center in New York.
It does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now, remember, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of absolute.
Yes, and that's
view.
The second explosion. You could see the plane come in just from the right-hand side of the screen. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway.
People are running away very, very quickly. There are more explosions further down the building.
This is so shocking, of course, to everybody watching.
I've never seen anything like it. It literally blew itself into World Trade Center.
The building's exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
David, we're going to cut the country off. President Bush is speaking.
Today, we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
And the Pentagon is being evacuated. There is a large fire there, and that is the smoke you see in the shot that you are looking at now.
It appears that an aircraft of some sort did hit the side of the Pentagon.
That's a very haunting description that Bob Kerr just gave of that low-flying aircraft near the White House, and one can only wonder if that was something that ultimately ended up in the Pentagon.
We just saw a live picture of what seemed to be a portion of the building falling away.
Wow.
And
wow.
Jamie,
I need you to stop for a second. There has just been a huge explosion. We can see a billowing smoke rising. And I'll tell you that I can't see that second tower, but there was a cascade of sparks and fire, and now it looks almost like a mushroom cloud explosion.
Let's go to the Trade Tower again, because, John, we now have a... What do we have? We don't...
Wow. It looks like a new large plume of smoke.
Thanks very much,
Dan. It has completely collapsed.
The whole side has collapsed?
The whole building has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed?
The building has collapsed.
Heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people are jumping out the windows. Over there, they're jumping out the windows, I guess, because they're trying to save themselves. I don't know.
And there's, you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, the top portion of which is collapsing. Good Lord. There are no words.
There's a haze everywhere. It's very, very difficult to see, but there has been a whole area has been covered by soot and ash, but it looks almost like snow. So as people are coming up the street running from the scene of this new explosion,
所有飞往纽约和华盛顿的客机都已转飞加拿大的机场。
I'm going to interrupt you, Senator McCain. These are the first pictures we have in. This is from Somerset County, Pennsylvania. This is where the United Airlines flight, I believe it is 176, went down.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward. And freedom will be defended.
That montage, which we also opened the show with today at 5:30 this morning. Glad you're with us today. Obviously, Mike Pence, the vice president, will be coming to Pennsylvania today to honor the victims at Shanksville. Of the 2,977 victims killed in the September 11th attacks, 412 were emergency workers, first responders, 343 firefighters, 37 police officers of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey Police Department, 23 police officers of the New York City Police Department, 8 emergency medical technicians from private emergency medical services, and 1 patrolman from the New York Fire Patrol, in addition, of course, to all the civilians who were killed that day. Since 9/11, and you might have heard the interview I did with the attorney earlier in the show, there have been 10 times as many police officers and firefighters who have died from 9/11 related illnesses than who perished in the actual attacks. So it continues to go on today. 855-839-1210 is our number. You know, it's very interesting as we get ready for this debate tomorrow night. And I was thinking about this, too. I was thinking about, you know, will Democrats address national security? What do they say about it? What's their thing? You know, I haven't really talked about it much. Have you noticed that? I mean, they've talked about it in the sense of they don't want a border wall. You know, they don't like the fact that the president wants to keep bad people out using a wall. I haven't really heard any of them actually address a national security issue. I haven't heard their plans for anything. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. It just doesn't sound to me like there's an actual plan there. In fact, I would argue that the Democrats have now gone all in on being open borders. Tulsi Gabbard, she agrees with that point. She's running for president. She served her country after 9/11. She decided to enlist and she served in the United States military, and she deserves great respect for that. She's not going to be the Democrat nominee. There's no chance in hell. They hate her. And one of the reasons why they hate her, she points out that the Democrats are, in fact, for open borders. Take a listen.
Yeah. So so we'll just do one or two more big issues. Then we'll, then we'll do some sillier fun stuff. How about that? So immigration. I think there's a general sense that the candidates, the Democrats, are basically trying to outdo each other for open borders, something like that. Do you think that's a fair way to start the question? And B, where do you sit on that?
I don't support open borders. Without secure borders, we don't really have a country. And while some of the other Democratic candidates will say, well, open borders, that's a conservative argument, and that's not really what's being advocated for, if you look at the practical implications of some of the things they're pushing for, it is essentially open borders. I think there's a few things that we've got to do when we're talking about immigration reform. One is we've got to have secure borders. This is not Trump's wall from sea to shining sea. It's about seeing, again, what makes sense. You know, I look at things from a practical, objective-oriented standpoint. I'm a soldier, so I look at what's our objective? Secure the borders. In some places, it may make the most sense to have a wall or some kind of physical barrier in place. In other places, it won't make sense. So you use technology and use all the other tools that we have ultimately to accomplish that objective of security at the border.
And that's another reason why she will not be the Democrat nominee. This is interesting. The Democrat who ran in North Carolina in the special election that they said was the referendum on the president, he also wanted border security. Now, think about that for a second, right? Because tomorrow night's the debate, and pretty much every Democrat frontrunner has now gone all in open borders. Even Joe Biden has moved far to the left on this issue. Right, yes, and that's the thing. So my question becomes, part of the reason why there are no real moderate mainstream Democrats on the national stage who have a chance of being the nominee is because the truth is this is a party now of open borders. And Tulsi Gabbard pointing that out is another reason why they absolutely hate her guts. The media won't point out to you that the Democrat who ran in that special election in North Carolina, he was not an open borders guy. He wanted to have strict border security. It's another reason why the race was close. So as you look at that outcome of that election yesterday in North Carolina, and you go, okay, if it was a referendum on Trump, it sounds to me like it was a referendum that serves him very well, because even against a moderate Democrat, the Republican wins in a district where you have a lot of new people moving into. That's why I also don't think Joe Biden's a real threat, honestly. I really don't. In the midst of all this, of course, John Bolton resigned or was fired, depending on if you believe the president who says he fired him or John Bolton who says he resigned. I believe the president fired him. I do. I think the president clashed with Bolton on a lot of things. I personally don't think John Bolton should have ever been hired. But I was overruled on that point, obviously. And I think the president was very frustrated by the fact that John Bolton had a different agenda than him. At the end of the day, your job is to serve the president of the United States of America. But yesterday when it happened, there was a media frenzy over this. And Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, was asked by Jim Acosta, probably the dumbest question of the day by Jim Acosta, of all dumb questions that CNN's Jim Acosta has asked. And Jim Acosta has asked a lot of very dumb questions. All right, so after the Bolton exodus, and again, I believe the president fired him. I really do. Cut four.
Is this national security team a mess?
Absolutely not. That's the most ridiculous question I've ever heard of. Let me just say, the national security team, which is what you asked, consists of the national security advisor, the secretary of defense, the secretary of state, myself, the chief of staff, and many others.
Can you disagree with the president?
Of course.
You know what's funny? And this is amazing to me, right? John Bolton's out because the president didn't agree with him. John Bolton, definitely more hawkish than Donald Trump, who wants to get us out of places like Afghanistan and things like that. So the president fires him, and the media, instead of focusing on that and suggesting, hey, maybe the president is actually trying to fulfill a campaign promise he made to get us out of Afghanistan, for example, all they want to focus on is the national security team a mess? And that's the dumb question asked by dopey Jim Acosta, I guess from his journalist internment camp. Is the national security team a mess? No, of course not. There are so many people working to keep the country safe. And I don't know about you, but I think a lot of the reason why the country is more safe today than it was years ago is because I think a lot of crazy people think if they mess with Donald Trump, they're going to pay a big price. You know, just because the president wants to get us out of these endless wars doesn't mean he doesn't want to go. If somebody messes with us, you know as well as I do, Kim Jong-un knows if he messes with Donald Trump, it's not going to end well for him. Iran knows that. All these bad actors know that. They know the president is not going to take it. He's going to fight in a way that they've never seen before. That's part of the reason why they're all being very, very good right now, if you think about it. All these nutjob dictators on the world stage are being very, very good because they know the president will destroy them. See, that's an important point to remember. A big component of national security is making the enemy believe you'll stop at nothing to wipe them off the face of the earth if they try anything. And that's not a feeling they had under Barack Obama. It's a feeling I think they do have under Donald Trump. And part of the reason, his unpredictability. You know, I remember when he and I were talking before he did a Chris Wallace interview. And Chris Wallace asked him the question about nukes. Will you commit to not using nuclear weapons? And he said, no, I won't commit to that. And Chris Wallace said, why? And Donald Trump was a candidate back then. It was 2015. He said, because I want to be unpredictable. I want the enemy to think I'll use whatever I have. Obviously, that's very important. And it's a big reason why I think that, anyway, we're safer today than we were years ago. 855-839-1210 is our number on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. This time, every 9/11, I always like to ask my dad to join us on the show. My dad, in addition to being a retired Port Authority police lieutenant, is the author of a book that I absolutely love called Rising from the Ashes. And it's a great story about a couple of retired cops who came together. Rising from the Ashes, the True Story of 9/11 and Recovery Team Romeo. So, Lieutenant Zeoli, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. Getting prepared to go in for our 14th Memorial Luncheon at Rhodes Tavern, where the 9/11 Cops Association have been meeting every week, 835 as of yesterday, since September 15, 2003.
And I know this is a very important day for everybody with the camaraderie. There's been, obviously, not only did your police department lose more police officers in one day than in our nation's history, 37. But since then, a lot of friends of yours with the 9/11 health-related issues as well.
It's amazing. I mean, think about it. There were 60 police officers that died on 9/11. Of course, 37 from the Port Authority PD and 23 from NYPD. And since, over 240 police officers have lost their lives due to 9/11-related illnesses and injuries, which is staggering. It's four times the amount that died on that day. And the fire department, too, they're going through a massive loss of death also post 9/11. They lost 343 members of the fire department on that day, and over 200 of their men have since perished also from 9/11-related illnesses and injuries. It's terrible. It doesn't stop.
You know what I love about your book, Dad, is that it's really a story of hope, of people coming together. I mean, the remarkable work that Recovery Team Romeo did. And by the way, why is it called Recovery Team Romeo, for those people that don't know?
Well, basically, we were all retired at the time. Actually, we had two active duty cops that were on medical restriction that were with us. And we had been retired, so they used the R as Recovery Team Romeo, the Romeo signifying that we were retired guys. And we were an independent recovery team working right under the direction of the newly appointed chief of department, Joe Morris, and Bob, his deputy chief. And basically, we worked for them, and we had some independence to do what we needed to do on the pile and to stay there as long as we wanted. Remember, the NYPD at the time was an army. It was almost 40,000 men. And the PA, which at the time only had about 1,600, and today they're about 2,300, but 1,600 men at the time, they were decimated. They lost about 2% of their department, with a lot of high-level commanders that lost their lives also responding. So Joe Morris, he gave it to us straight. He said he needed us. If we'd stay, he'd like to have us. And they gave us new uniforms, new ID cards. We went to work, and we stayed there until the last day out, which was May 30th of 2002. And each man on my team put in approximately 2,000 hours of their own time. And we were never paid. We never wanted to be paid. We were never compensated. It's just something that had to be done. And we decided in the beginning of October, when Mayor Giuliani and Governor Pataki asked the rest of the world to step aside, because the recovery, rescue aspect of the mission had been over. Anybody who was going to come out alive had already been taken out alive, and now it was going to be a recovery mission. And we had a meeting with the 12 of us in Recovery Team Romeo, and we decided that we were not going to leave Ground Zero until we brought the souls of everybody that was lost that day back to their families. We never realized in a million years, nobody ever did, that we would not be able to find most of those people. There's still 1,100 that have not been found or identified. It's so sad, but, you know, it is what it is today.
My dad's with us. His book, Rising from the Ashes, The True Story of 9/11 and Recovery Team Romeo. It's a really remarkable read about the officers who come together every single week at a bar and restaurant in New York State, and they get together and they have great camaraderie. And over the years, too, the group that goes together has grown, right?
Oh, yeah. We started with we started as three lieutenants, two from NYPD and myself. And we jokingly called ourselves the Lieutenants Club. And over the years, we had to change the name to the 9/11 Cops Association, because we have police officers from so many different departments and states. We have them from Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, your state troopers, local cops, village cops. It's amazing. And all these guys came together because of their determination to do something on 9/11. And they went down to the pile, and they did what they could and stayed as long as they could. And so now we keep that camaraderie together, especially because of the illnesses and injuries that most of us have sustained on 9/11 as a result of the attack. And we give each other support and hope. And that's basically what our organization is about.
I can only imagine how important that is. I mean, I know a lot of the guys, obviously, who you hang out with on Tuesdays when you go up the roads, and they're great people, and you know, you've lost some very, very good friends of yours even since 9/11. That being together, you know, just all of you guys being together on a day like today, how important is that?
It's very, very important. You know, for the first couple of years, we would always go down to the site of the attack at Ground Zero for the first couple of years, and we'd go down into the bottom of the pit itself, and we'd leave flowers, and we'd say prayers, and we'd go to a mass, and then we'd go to basically a luncheon. But after the first couple of years, it turned into a construction zone, when, of course, they had to clear the debris out, and they had to begin building the Freedom Tower. And then it became somewhat of a sightseeing area, for visitors to the city, which you can't blame. So we had to find another place to go, and Tyler Rhodes had offered us his place. And it just we're all together on 9/11. The venue is perfect for us. It's centrally located where everybody can get there on the highway, throughway, et cetera. And we've been doing this. Again, this will be our 18th memorial luncheon, the 14th of them at Tyler's Rhodes North Tavern. And we come together, and some guys need some help emotionally. Some guys need some help physically. We do what we have to do. We make it work.
You know, I should mention, too, that it's an easy place to get to. If you're ever driving upstate New York, if you take 287 or 87, it's very easy to get to that restaurant, Rhodes. And bikers are always welcome, too. There's always a lot of motorcycles in the parking lot. And he's got a great butcher. I mean, his burger there is amazing. I love the burger. Actually, true story, my dad was the best man at my wedding. We went there for our pre-wedding dinner celebration, and I remember the steak I got there, too, was absolutely amazing. He's got a great butcher. Where does his meat come from, anyway? Do you know?
Tyler used to be a butcher himself, so he makes sure that the purveyors that bring him his product are going to be of the highest quality. And, we're there today. Anybody who wants to come down and join us, we'll be there after 1 o'clock this afternoon. Probably till about 9 o'clock at night, and anybody in a 9/11 family, any police officers, firefighters, anybody who lost family, anybody just wants to be near the 9/11 community is welcome to join us.
Rising from the Ashes, the True Story of 9/11 and Recovery Team Romeo, the author of the book, My Father, Lieutenant Anthony Zioli. Really some great guys covered in this book. It's a really wonderful story of police officers coming together after this horrific attack. Dad, I remember when you worked at the World Trade Center. I remember when you were assigned there.
I was assigned there. I was a rookie sergeant. I just had gotten promoted, and they sent me down there. And, the place wasn't for me. I was a very active cop in Times Square in the early 70s and 80s when it was more like New York City was more like Tijuana than it is like New York City today. And so to get promoted was great, but then to be signed to a very boring, which I thought was a very boring assignment, to walk around basically a shopping zone and office complex wasn't for me. So as soon as I was able to transfer out, I went right back to the Port Authority bus terminal right in the heart of Tijuana. And the next time I was down there basically was on, 9/11 to respond to the terror and the attacks. So, and then I spent, like I said, 2,000 hours down there.
Dad, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No,
I was going to say, and I never regretted it, and I would do it tomorrow if I had to.
When the first World Trade Center bombing happened, it was 1993. After that, I know security was intense afterward. I remember when I worked in the governor's office the summer of 2001, being down there and just thinking that the security was so intense there. They offered me a chance to go up to the observation deck, which you've taken us, used to take us to back when we were kids. And I said, nah, it's all right. I said, my dad will take me some other time. It's okay. And obviously, I would never get the opportunity again. Could anybody have ever imagined and foreseen how they would try to attack those towers? And what was the significance, you think, of why they wanted to go after the World Trade Center towers, which was owned by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey?
Well, I think it was the World Trade Center, especially if you're flying into Newark Airport, or actually in some of the New York airports as well, Kennedy and LaGuardia. If you come in through the southern portion of the state, you'll see the Trade Center from so many miles away. It's like, welcome to America, welcome to New York, welcome to the United States, welcome to our successful capitalistic country. And it was a symbol of America. And they had always talked about bringing those towers down. And they tried, of course, in February of 93. And the plan then was to topple one building into the other and have them both come down. And, of course, that failed. And they always said, Ramzi Youssef had told the investigators that were on the case that you know, they would come back again and they'd get it eventually. And he did. They did. They came back and they took it down. And nobody believed those towers were going to come down. The cops, the firemen, the terrorists, nobody ever believed that would happen. And my God, it did happen. And all those families, the thousands of people affected by it, usually everybody knows somebody that lost their lives at the World Trade Center, a friend, a neighbor, a service person, somebody. Everybody knows somebody that lost their life at the World Trade Center. 18 years later, it's a shame our nation has eroded so much in those 18 years, because the first couple of years after that, we were one happy kumbaya nation. Everybody was helping everybody. Everybody cared about everybody. We put politics aside. And now I can't believe what happened to our nation. And it's pitiful, especially for the survivors of the 9/11 attack.
Well, you know, it's one of the reasons why I always like having you on the show this year, because I think your book is very, very hopeful. It's a lot of hope. It's a wonderful story. It's an important story. Rising from the Ashes, the true story of 9/11 and recovery team Romeo. I think it's very important, the camaraderie that you and your fellow officers have, because, yes, it's important to remember the people who lost their lives on 9/11. But I always say it's also important to remember the people, the survivors and what they're dealing with. And I know a lot of the guys. I know your health issues, Dad. I don't know if you want to bring them up or not. That's up to you. I know what you struggle with. I know a lot of the guys also just have a lot of emotional issues that they're dealing with, too.
Yeah, one of the guys in my squad, a great cop, he was one of the, actually, remember I said there were two medically restricted officers assigned to my unit. And they weren't supposed to be down there at all. They were ordered not to. And I went to Chief Joe Morris and I pled their case. And he said, absolutely, if you want them, you have them. And I took him down. And one of the guys, great cop, Jimmy O'Hanlon, he took his own life. He actually jumped in a final act of desperation from the George Washington Bridge. And a lot of guys, not only in my squad, but in a lot of police officers have since taken their own lives. It's a very tragic situation, both physically and mentally. And myself, you know, I was lucky with no PTSD, but a lot of physical problems. I had 5 ground zero related surgeries already. You know, and every 3 months, I have to go down to World Trade Center medical monitoring and get treated and renew my medicines, et cetera. All my guys go. All the NYPD guys go as well. And that's something we're going to have to live with for as long as we're here.
4 9/11 related surgeries, you said.
Five
9/11. That's amazing. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's people don't know that. They don't understand that. I think sometimes it's just they think everybody's just fine.
Yeah, it's you know, I had one of my closest friends, Barry Galfano, was an NYPD emergency service captain, and we worked closely. I actually worked for Barry down at the site. And after 9/11, we became very close friends. And the week before he died, we had dinner with him, and we used to have these dinners all the time. And I sat next to Barry and kept putting his head down. He had cancer. And he looked at me and he said, I just want to tell you that one of the good things that happened at 9/11 was that I got to meet you, and I want to tell you I love you. That those words and that vision, I can never get out of my mind. And myself and 2 other lieutenants, Sean Lawless and Mark Porter from the NYPD, we had the privilege of spending the last Sunday with Barry at his home on Long Island, and he perished a couple of days later. And we have an actual, you know, tribute memorial dinner for him every June to mark his passing and to mark his friendship and his wonderful leadership. So that it doesn't go away. The point I'm trying to make here with 9/11, it's always with us, and I hope everybody always remembers and just, you know, take a moment or two to think about what happened that day and maybe apply it to their lives today.
Well, I applaud you for your work here and bringing all these officers together and firefighters and first responders the way you do, and the 9/11 Cops Association, and this weekly get together at Rhodes Tavern in up in New York State. And the camaraderie and being there for each other, just the friendships that have been created after this, and it's really important stuff. And I know how seriously you take it, Dad, because the only thing you love doing more than being with your grandkids, who you just adore and they love you so much, is being with your fellow officers at Rhodes. So I know that. Very, very much. So the book is Rising from the Ashes, The True Story of 9/11 and Recovery Team Romeo, Lieutenant Zioli. Dad, I know today's a tough day for you and your friends, so I just know we're all thinking about you guys, okay?
Thanks, buddy. I love you guys and miss you, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Rich Zioli Show on your schedule. This is the Zioli Show podcast.
I should also mention, because obviously I have a fondness for police officers, that the Philadelphia FOP, they're great friends of the show, and they're hosting us tomorrow night, FOP Lodge 5, for our debate watch party. We are blessed to have one of the finest police departments in America in this city. And please come out tomorrow night and see the FOP and say hello. I'm also going to mention, I mentioned this before, I'm not going to ask you to make a donation but they have their survivors fund, and it's a very important fund. And if you want to throw a couple bucks in the hat to help them out, you know, there's been like 8 cops who've been shot in the city recently, and the survivors fund goes to help their families. So tomorrow night at the FOP Lodge 5, it's going to be a fun night. I promise you, it's going to be fun. It's going to be an absolutely fun night. These get-togethers that we do are great. They are absolutely fun and enjoyable. But if you'd also like to make a contribution to the FOP Survivors Fund, certainly they would love it, and your generosity would go a long way to helping them. I'd appreciate it very, very much. 855-839-1210. I want to mention, too, Kaylee McEnany will be on the show at 8:20 today to talk. She's with the Trump campaign to talk about the debate tomorrow night and the president's reelection. It's very important, clearly, as we're getting ready for that. And I would be remiss if I did not mention to you as well that in addition to having our Zioli Army, and Dom Giordano is going to be there as well, but he's like an honorary Army member, of course. We'll have shirts tomorrow night, too, at the FOP Lodge 5. We will have shirts. And I think now some people might have some of the ladies edition shirts on hand as well. I don't know how we do that in a way that doesn't cause all kinds of people to be offended, but we must figure out a way to do it. A secret sign or something?
No. There's no offense taken. We'll be taking measurements. And anybody that...
He's so unwoke. No, I mean,
well, I'll do the measurements, so that
makes
it okay.
Well, if you do it, Dawn, that's fine, actually. Yeah. You know, yes. If you do it. And again, I want to remind you, if you're triggered by any of the following, please don't come tomorrow night. Cops, politics, people having fun, alcohol, political opinions. If any of those things trigger you, please don't come tomorrow night to our debate watch party. Did I cover it well?
You covered everything.
Very, very well. Excellent.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Okay, 8:06-ish.
Three, two, one.
8:06. Let's check in with Dawn.
Yes, Zioli Show News. Good morning. 70 degrees. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. The new acting Philadelphia police commissioner says she's sorry that she wore a satirical T-shirt a quarter century ago. This is Christine Coulter under fire after a councilwoman called for her to resign. So the acting commish Coulter opening her testimony yesterday.
Told you.
Yep. Zioli totally predicted this when this photo surfaced 25 years ago. This photo was taken of Coulter wearing an LAPD T-shirt with a reference to the beating of Rodney King, reading, "We treat you like a king." So Coulter said it was wrong. She would not wear that today. And so that was her.
It's a stupid shirt. It was 1994. It was Wildwood. Cops use gallows humor to get through things, and they also make fun of other police departments. It was 1994, but I told you, Dawn, I said that I said to you, Mayor Kenney is going to force her to apologize. And sure enough, she did. And did they accept it? Nope. They still don't accept it.
They don't.
So stupid.
She also testified, and these were some new details, that the investigation found that 193 Philadelphia police officers, they say, violated the department's social media policy. This is that Facebook controversy. So 15 officers fired, 7 suspended for 30 days, and others are still being reprimanded or suspended for up to 5 days. So that continues. We'll continue to watch it. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court will hear oral arguments this morning within about an hour at Philadelphia City Hall. These are two cases dealing with the death penalty. Philadelphia's DA, Larry Krasner, wants to get rid of the death penalty. Attorney General Josh Shapiro argues that decision should be left up to the legislature.
Yes, it should. I side with Josh Shapiro on this. I mean, he's absolutely correct. That's why we have a legislature and a governor to decide on these issues.
So we'll watch that one, too. That should be interesting.
By the way, why is the prosecutor going to argue the death penalty is unconstitutional? If he doesn't believe in it, just don't offer it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, they decide on the sentence that they want to propose. This is all about Larry Krasner grandstanding as usual. What is it Larry Krasner is running for is my question. You know he's running for something.
Of course. And people have said for years that Josh Shapiro, who's from Montgomery County, so, you know, I've known him for decades, that the people have said he's running for governor. So to me, this is Krasner seeing Shapiro, they're both Democrats, as his competition.
Oh, my God.
For the future.
Oh, could you imagine Krasner statewide? Oh, wow.
But what's interesting is he makes Shapiro look very conservative, doesn't he?
So, well, I mean, Shapiro, for the most part, is a pretty reasonable guy. He's one of the last reasonable Democrats left in America. There's like 6.
This day in history, 8:46 a.m., 18 years ago, September 11th, hijackers crashed that first airplane into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. And within seconds, of course, first responders rushed to the site of what would become America's deadliest coordinated terrorist attacks. So within an hour right now, hundreds are gathering in Bucks County at the 9/11 Garden of Reflection, created to remember and honor all 2,973 people killed that day, including the 18 residents from Bucks County, Lower Makefield. And of course, a crowd of victims' relatives will gather at Ground Zero today, as they do every year, while President Donald Trump will join the observance at the Pentagon. Vice President Mike Pence is to speak at the third attack site near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Former President George W. Bush, commander-in-chief at the time of those attacks, is due at the afternoon wreath laying at the Pentagon. And going viral, let's take you to a much lighter note. There's a restaurant owner really taking some heat over his menu. This is a newly opened taqueria. This is in New Mexico, and he created the menu using some terms made famous by President Trump and, you know, during these times. So the menu items, the immigrant, the wall, and lock her up. So it's like,
what, do you know what the ingredients are in these things?
I'll have the immigrant burrito, you know. So people are going crazy over this. The owner's name, Hanif Mohammed.
Oh,
he's a Muslim gentleman. He says,
well, that's the reason why there hasn't been a national boycott
right.
and why they haven't gone there and arrested him yet.
So this is the interesting thing. He says, look, I was trying to have some fun with this and maybe be edgy, spark some conversation over tacos. But
OK, I have not heard of this story. Greg, have you heard of this story?
No.
I have not. No,
OK,
this is the first I'm hearing it. All right.
So now think about this now. I want everybody to think about this. Stop what you're doing and think about this now. There is a restaurant using cultural appropriation, A, and B, mocking immigrants and children in cages and ripped from their mommies and their butt. And yet it's not a national news story. Now, isn't that something? Now, does anybody think if the guy's name was, say, Matt Smith?
Matt would be all over
with
the news.
With a MAGA hat on.
With a MAGA hat. I shouldn't use Matt Smith. He's my buddy. He works with us. Right. John Smith
John
with a MAGA
Smith,
hat.
Yes.
That this would be a national news story.
100%.
Anybody?
100%.
So what do you think the reason that it's not a national news story is in this day and age of outrage everywhere we turn?
Well, it's a very local. It's a very,
very local story.
Yeah,
local.
Not, you know.
So they haven't called Hanif Mohammed to be on CBS National?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that this is Trump's America causing these angry people like Hanif Mohammed to mock immigrants. And it's interesting.
Very interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Also going.
Any calls on this, Ivan? Interesting. Yeah, why doesn't the lesser Cuomo have him on? And, and he could lecture him like he lectures everybody else. See? Just saying. Oh, by the way, did you hear Don Lemon was on with one of the late night idiots last night? Who was he on with?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Do you have the audio of this?
I do.
Want to hear this, Don? Remember, yes. I predicted this too. I said, when the lesser Cuomo lost his mind with the Fredo thing, remember?
Yes.
So I said, what I said, I think the guy's on steroids because he's always showing these weird workout videos. And I said, I think he had a roid rage. I think the lesser had a roid rage because it just built up all these years for him. Well, so Don Lemon is on last night. Listen to what he said about Cuomo.
What does Chris Cuomo eat? Is it just raw meat? And does he eat with his hands?
If I can't tell you. Because it's besides steroids, I'm kidding, Chris.
Whoa!
Wait a minute. Maybe I'm not.
Cuomo, the lesser, had a roid rage when he was doing his Fredo freakout.
You called it.
That was a roid rage. That's amazing.
If you play, it's only a 30-second clip. If you play it, if you play the whole thing through, he says it a third time.
What does Chris Cuomo eat? Is it just raw meat? And does he eat with his hands?
If I can't tell you because it's besides steroids, I'm kidding, Chris. Wait a minute, maybe I'm not.
He really is like the brother you never had.
Besides steroids and tequila. No, he's actually, I mean, he eats everything. We were out
three times.
No, I was just kidding.
He had popcorn.
He's a very intense guy. It
and he's huge.
Like,
he's very, very intense.
Okay, so you know what I think that is? It's Don Lemon trying to let the world know Chris Cuomo is on steroids because he knows he's losing his mind. And he needs help. It's like an intervention.
It's 100% an intervention.
Right, Dawn? That's what that is. It's an intervention right there.
It would
there.
Seem like it. It
the
does.
Lesser roid rage. That's what it was. The lesser roid rage.
You don't bring it up three times unless you're serious about it.
No, it's one thing to make a joke about, you know, Stocker's a pothead or something like that. But that, which has been a joke, he's not, but that's been a running joke for you for years, 15 right?
15 years, yeah.
So it's one thing to make that joke, but if I know that Greg really had a pot problem and I said it three times, it's because I'm hoping that people do something about it. I'm hoping that they step in and have an intervention.
Oh my gosh.
The lesser is a roid rager. Yep. Now, his roid rage is a lesser roid rage because most people have a roid rage and actually knock the person out. Right? That's why even his roid rages are lesser, Dawn. Even his roid rages are lesser.
His roid rages still get beat by Hannity and Maddow.
Exactly. Sorry, Dawn. Please continue with your news.
I'm looking at the Urban Taqueria menu. They also have a fake news Chipotle chicken dish.
Now, I would think, Dawn, now the national media, which warns us day in and day out, Dawn, of the First Amendment, how it's under attack every day in Trump's America. If there is a food item, culturally appropriation at best, and then now also mocking the threat that journalists face every day, I would imagine, Dawn, that the media would talk about this and it would be a national news story.
One would think. Now, we'll see if they have anything to say about KFC. Yeah, the fast food
chain. By the way, once again,
chain.
The name of the owner of the restaurant
is Hanif Muhammad, who is an immigrant, who is Muslim and who is an immigrant. I confirmed that.
In Trump's America, immigrants named Hanif Muhammad feel the right to culturally appropriate, mock immigrants, and attack the press. Only in Trump's America.
I love it. So we have to talk about Katie Failinger's story. This was the KFC love chicken story. It's a dating sim called I Love You, Colonel Sanders, a finger-licking good dating simulator. So you play as a promising culinary student as you try to date your classmate, Colonel Sanders. Will the Kentucky Fried Chicken mogul choose you to become his business partner or maybe something much more intimate?
Who wants to be with the colonel?
I don't know. It's hysterical. It's a I love you, finger licking good dating simulator.
All right. I just don't know why the reward of being with Colonel Sanders doesn't seem like you're actually winning anything right there.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Weird. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's strange. Free chicken's one thing, but.
Eyewitness weather. We've got 90 or nearly 90. What did Katie say? Flirting with 90 degrees today. Very humid. We start to cool off tomorrow. Dawn with Zioli Show News, radio.com app.
The Rich Zioli Show on.
on your schedule. This is the Zioli Show podcast.
All right, 855-839-1210. Before we get to Kaylee, why don't we do our movie contest? Because this is good. We got a great prize here. It's tickets to see Bob Seger, the one and only Bob Seger, on November 1st, 2019. And if you listened to the show yesterday, this should not be hard for you.
I'm having an issue
with my
computer.
No! Dawn, someday we're going to be in a top 10 market. The show is going to take off. I just know it.
Well, Greg, this is for you. The libertarian vegan sautéed mushrooms, pica de gallo.
Oh, cool.
Wait, that's one of the items on Mohammed's menu?
Reading, yeah. Dawn is still reading the menu.
Or the Republicans, pastor-style achiote grilled pork tacos.
The reason why Dawn's reading the menu is because she doesn't eat and she's starving.
I know. This looks really good.
She's starving right now and...
And I was trying to kill time while Stalker gets his computer back up.
Which we have, it's not going to come back up. I don't know how we even do this.
There's no way to do it without.
If the computer doesn't come up, should I reenact it? And then maybe people can guess that way?
No.
No, really, I'm wondering about that. Can we do that?
Oh, the Mueller grilled shrimp pico de gallo.
She's still reading the menu.
Grilled shrimp, get it?
Would you need to eat something?
I'm sorry.
You need to eat something. I'm telling you right now, you need to eat, Dawn. We're all very worried about you.
I think I can do it here. No, look at that. Look at that.
On Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hey, you guys. Mama.
Come to mama, baby. Come on.
Mom, you've been bad.
Think you know what it is? Be call at 12 at 855-839-1210, and you could win this great prize.
Like I said, tickets to see Bob Seger at the Wells Fargo Center, November 1st. If you want tickets yourself, go to wellsfargocenter.com. Good luck. I do not think they'd be able to make that movie today. I think that's another movie that they would go after and say is offensive.
100%.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, I'm so excited to welcome back to the show a wonderful person and an outstanding guest. Kaylee McEnany is the National Press Secretary for the President's 2020 campaign. How are you, Kaylee?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Good to have you back. I know the debate is tomorrow night. So, first of all, I think last night, the referendum in North Carolina was, if they want to call it a referendum, well, then it was a great night for the president.
Oh, it was certainly a great night for the president. That race used to be double digits separating the two candidates. The president closed the gap. Obviously, Dan Bishop won. It was a tremendous victory, and it was only made possible because President Trump put on two rallies in North Carolina. There were five fundraisers by administration officials. The president sent out a dozen tweets and a ton of monetary and volunteer investment. So it just goes to show the power of the president's endorsement in a political race.
The spin by the media today is that the president has a problem in the suburbs. I don't believe it. What do you say to that?
No, that's absolutely ridiculous. Last night made that eminently clear. And for those saying, he should have won by more. Well, first of all, a win is a win. But second of all, there's a big difference when President Trump's name is on the ballot. He won that district by 12 points when he ran in 2016. Now it's a game of not winning support, but translating support to another candidate, which is pretty tough to do, but nevertheless, the president managed to do it. He doesn't have a problem in the suburbs. The economy's soaring. It's never been hotter, and this president will soar to victory.
Kaylee, talk to me about the Democrat candidates who are on that stage. I mean, it seems to me like they've gone so hard left, even Biden, you know, coming out against coal and natural gas. There's no way you can win Pennsylvania, which you have to win to become president, with that kind of an idea. It's like they've all gone so hard left that there's no one, I don't think. I mean, even Rahm Emanuel said none of these Democrats can relate to Americans in a general election.
No, exactly. I mean, if you'll remember back to Hillary Clinton and President Obama wanting to put the coal industry out of work, it didn't work out because the coal industry, those states like West Virginia, Pennsylvania, they voted for the president. because they knew they could trust him to keep their job. Standing on a debate stage like Joe Biden did and saying, I want to eliminate fossil fuels and therefore, you know, thousands of jobs across this country, if not millions, when you consider the subsidiary industries, that's a losing strategy. Making your debate slogan, let's put Americans out of work, which is what Joe Biden and all the Democrats represent, a threat to our country, to industry, to the livelihood of this great economy the president has created.
Kayleigh McEnany joins me. She's the national press secretary for the president's reelection campaign. You can follow her on Twitter at Kayleigh McEnany, and I will retweet that, of course. You've got over 260,000 followers, so people can easily find you. You are, I think, a really excellent spokesperson for the president. The media loves to say he also has a women problem, a female voter problem. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, ridiculous. You know, there are a lot of women who are silent Trump voters, meaning they might not articulate their support out loud to their neighbors, to the media, but they certainly will go in and vote. And I've met a lot of women like that at the president's rallies, some of whom now boldly proclaim their support, wearing MAGA gear from head to toe. But some who just say, look, I know in the quiet of the voting booth that President Trump is best for my family. And, you know, may not scream it from the rooftops because I don't want to talk to a pollster or suffer the backlash that comes with being a Trump supporter. But I support the president nevertheless. And how could you not with the 65-year low in female unemployment, with jobs ticking up, women taking the majority of the new jobs created. This president's opened opportunity for women, and women recognize that, not to mention shepherding paid family leave, which is so important to many women in this country.
Well, well said. I was thinking about it, too, from the perspective of, you just made a great point, and that is that people don't want to admit it. You know, we're living in such a crazy time right now that if they find out you're a Trump supporter, they'll go after you, they'll make your life miserable, they'll publicly confront you. Who would want to tell a pollster that they support the president? Nobody. That's why these polls were wrong in 2016, and I know they're going to be wrong in 2020.
Yeah, exactly. There is a lot of backlash that comes with being a public out there Trump supporter. If you go back and read some of the headlines from 2016, it's, you know, Trump supporter has his car keyed or his house egged or her house egged. You know, there's a lot that comes with it, and being bold is not so easy, but I do think it is important that we are bold. We have to tell our neighbors that we support the president and why. There's so much good news to share, like prescription drug costs coming down. Yesterday alone, we learned that household income has peaked to its highest place since the peak in 1999. So 2 decades, we now have household income at its highest point, poverty at its lowest point since 2001. I mean, there's so much good. There's no reason to be bashful for being a Trump supporter, but I totally get it. It's not easy when you have the likes of CNN and MSNBC making it extremely difficult.
What do you expect the Democrats to do tomorrow night? Are they going to try to go after Joe Biden and get him off the stage? What do you think their strategy is going to be?
I think so, because you've seen Kamala take a punch at Joe Biden. You've seen him relatively untouched by Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. But, you know, they've got to punch Joe Biden. They have to attack him. Their fate depends on it, their electoral fate. The only way you can win this is by overcoming Joe Biden. And I think it can be done. I think it will be done, because Joe Biden is a gaffe machine. Every other day there's something wrong he said, so his campaign has to hide him off the trail. And you know, he's not a good candidate. So I do think the name of the game tomorrow is Attack Joe, and that's what we're going to see from a slew of candidates on that stage.
I mean, some of these candidates are barely still, they're at 1%, 2%. I think tomorrow is their last chance, because they're going to just, nobody's going to give them any money if they don't make it, if they don't do a big splash tomorrow night. So for some of these candidates, tomorrow may be literally their last shot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, we've already seen the stage whittled down from 20 to now 10. And all of these candidates are desperate to hang on as we approach that next debate, especially those at the end of the stage. And everyone's looking to make that big splash or that big impression. And now you've got all the top contenders on one stage. So you have, you know, radical socialists all here duking it out. You don't have them spread out, you know, at the likes of Marianne Williamson and others sprinkled in. These are the top tier. So I think the gloves come out. They have to if these Democrats want to survive this primary.
Kayleigh, I hope you'll come back during the campaign and talk more about this. I always enjoy having you on. Your perspective is great. So thank you.
Absolutely. Would love to. Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
I'm starving now, too. Now that you talked about that friggin' Mexican menu, I'm literally now my stomach is groaning.
I know.
Groaning.
Growling.
Growling. We had our winner of the contest. Who was it? Our movie contest. Hello.
Is she on line one?
No, she was gone. All right. No big deal. Joe, do you remember her name? Joe! Well, would somebody wake him up in there, please?
By the way, the bad ombre is chilled.
Joe! Hello!
Yes?
Who won the contest?
Oh, Stephanie.
Stephanie, thank you. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that. Stop reading the menu. No, sorry. Do not. Greg,
this is funny, Greg, though. Greg,
drop her mic. Go ahead. What is it now, the bad
it's
ombre?
The bad ombre, which is chilled shrimp. And black pepper.
See, now, Dawn, it's interesting to me again. It seems like a very, I don't know, offensive name for a food item. Why the national media is not covering this, why there's not a boycott by the left. It's so fascinating to me that this white Christian Trump supporter.
No.
I'm sorry, what?
The owner, Hanif Muhammad.
That's not right. That can't be right.
An immigrant who's Muslim.
A white, U.S.-born racist Trump supporter with his tacos, culturally appropriating.
It's a very clever menu.
It really is.
And it looks delicious.
See, the guy's smart. He thinks he's going to get all this outrage and it's going to grow his business. Except, dude, you're Muslim. They're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, he needs to have like a front man.
Yeah, right. Yes. Get somebody. Get a white waiter to pretend like they own the restaurant.
Yes.
You'll be on MSNBC and CNN tonight. That's what you do, Mohammed. Let me help you out here. Let's arrange a call with Mohammed. I'm going to give him some tips on how to grow his business. I'm dead serious.
Okay.
Well, tell him, like, it's all you got to do, man, because they'll never cover you right now. Because in your eyes, you're a victim in Trump's America. That's why you're doing this right now. You know what I mean?
Where is this restaurant again?
It's in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I know people in Albuquerque now. We might, right?
No, I mean, yeah. I mean,
no, our Evil Jared moved Eagle out Scott. There to, he's taken a job as the operations manager of several radio stations out there. It's great for him.
Yes.
So he brought his evil to
Eagle Scout.
Nice. Where is it now? Nevada? New Mexico?
New Mexico. Yeah.
He's also making meth like Breaking Bad it's style. True. So that's true. It's yeah, absolutely yeah. true. 100%.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.